we see that doctors who are coming from this region in Gaza, in Rafah, they're reporting on huge suffering. I want to know what's your take and what's going on in Gaza, in Rafah.
I think every American citizen ought to have to watch those videos and understand exactly what the Israeli Defense Force and the government led by Likud in Jerusalem is doing in Gaza. All those premonitions we had from Gallant to Netanyahu himself about their animals, their dogs, they will not exist when we finish this. We're going to kill them all. All those upfront remarks weren't just sparked by October the 7th and the aftermath thereof. They were sparked by the genuine feelings of 85% of the Jewish Israelis. So if you got rid of Netanyahu, Schumer's remarks were pure politics, trying to get, you know, some Democrats back to the vote. Pure politics, because he knows if Benny Gantz comes in and Netanyahu goes, which is what he was asking for, that won't make a bit of difference. It won't make a bit of difference. I'll tell you how it came really viscerally home to me here recently. When I was chief of staff at the State Department, the Corys came to see me, Rachel Corey's mom and dad. And I tried my best for almost 6 months to get the Israeli Defense Force and then the Israeli government to admit they had done a poor investigation into their daughter's death. She was working in Gaza. She was in front of a home she was trying to protect from an Israeli bulldozer, and the bulldozer killed her, I think murdered her. We never could get anything out of the Israeli government that we could believe. Well, it just so happens that the other day I got notice that that same family, the Nasrallah family, that Rachel was living with and trying to protect the home of that day when she was murdered, they are in dire straits right now in Rafah. And so we started a GoFundMe campaign and so forth to try and get them out. It's a bigger family now, a lot of young people, got a pregnant mother, and we're trying to get them out. And if you'll allow me, I'm just going to tell people on your show, here's where you need to go. You need to go to https://gofund.me/BD86EA5E. That's Bravo Delta 86 Echo Alpha 5 Echo. And you can donate. We need about $85,000-$90,000. The Egyptian group that's handling the evacuation requires that. You can imagine it's dangerous work. We've got a few of them moving already. We've raised about $73,000-$74,000. So we need about $10,000-$12,000 more. Anyone who wants to give to that is welcome to do so. The Nasrallah family is a family dear to my heart because I had to play with the Israelis and their absolute inability to tell us the truth with regard to Rachel Corey's death. And now the same family is encountered again. It's just one family, but it's an example of what's happening in Rafah. And I don't want to see them in the kind of videos that you showed me and that I've looked at elsewhere, where doctors are just crying. I mean, they're actually shedding tears. That information about performing surgery on wounded Palestinians and then losing them in the hospital and in the rubble. You can't find them to follow up. And they're dying. They're dying from infection. They're dying from not being treated post-surgery. They don't go into an ICU. They go into some bombed-out room somewhere, and the doctor can't even find them afterwards. This is horrible. It's horrible. And to think that my country is aiding and abetting this process makes me sick.
We've seen that Netanyahu, in his interview with CNN, he was insisting on his policy, on what he has been doing all these months in Gaza. We have Chuck Schumer talking about Netanyahu administration. We have these protests against Netanyahu and his administration. Do you see anything coming to this administration to bring them to some sort of sanity, to bring this conflict to an end, to some sort of ceasefire?
You know, I'm going to tell you something that I hate to say, but I've been here so many times. I'm almost 80 years old, been in the government for almost half a century, taught for 16, 17 years, government after that. I think what we're going to see is we're going to see Rafah go ahead with this offensive. I think the Israelis are going to make some sort of prima facie, you know, cosmetic and lots of propaganda to go along with it that they didn't do too badly. Yet we're going to kill a lot of women and children and destroy a lot of places. And we're going to wind up probably with the United States saying, okay, it's over. Okay, it's done. Oh, please leave us alone now and let them finish up. And then they'll probably get rid of Netanyahu, or they may get rid of him tomorrow. And Benny Gantz will come in and change nothing. And then we'll go back to the same routine we've had for the past 15 years, to be sure, and really since 1967 and the UN resolutions governing what happened in the aftermath from 242 on. And that will mean that they'll continue to destroy the Palestinian homes. They'll continue to erect. In the West Bank now, I'm told that it's just going whole hog. It's going whole hog, and no one's paying any attention to it. You know, we sanctioned a couple of West Bank settlers. Oh, big deal. They're tearing everything out. And East Jerusalem, too. And they're going to do the same thing in Gaza as soon as things quiet down. Doesn't matter who's leading Israel. So we'll go back to the same thing again. And then 10 or 15 years down the road, the people will react again and they'll attack Israel again. But Netanyahu will be dead or gone or in prison in shackles, hopefully. It won't make any difference. That's the nature of this beast, the nature of the U.S. relationship with this state, the nature of this state's relationship with its neighbors. It won't change. I'm sad to say that, but that's the realist in me saying what I think is going to be the outcome.
Majority of Israelis are supporting the Netanyahu administration's policy in Gaza. But we have to take into consideration that these are the society fed by this propaganda for years by this administration. If you want to see some sort of changes in Israel and their policy toward Gaza, we have to consider some changes in the government. This would be the first step. And then there may be some changes come to the society.
Well, I agree with you. I think the first thing they need is a constitution, something to hold their feet to the fire. And their courts need to interpret that constitution in a way that ameliorates the problems that they have with the Knesset being able to do whatever it wants to do, whenever it wants to do it, and a prime minister too, especially in wartime. So you need a whole fundamental change to the state of Israel. That's why they don't have a constitution. That's why they didn't want a constitution, because they didn't want to have to answer to anything that might hold them back from what they wanted to do, from the Nakba forward. Then you need probably a sea change in Israeli attitudes. That'll be the most difficult thing to do. The way to get that sea change, though, is to build a viable process for either of two solutions. One, you have a democratic state, not an apartheid state. When Netanyahu says that Arab Israelis, so to speak, Arab citizens of Israel have the same rights as Jewish citizens of Israel, I want to laugh. And then I want to puke because he's lying through his teeth. They're treated worse than blacks were in the United States. So you've got to have a sea change there. And that sea change probably has to come through education. It has to come through either this one solution where you have a democratic single state that everyone lives in, or the two-state solution where you have a viable Palestinian state. And when I say viable, it must be economically and security and foreign policy-wise a viable state. Either one of those solutions, that's a long time in bringing them about, but we've already been at it for 70 years, and abject failure is what we've created. And the slaughter, this genocide that's going on today, we need to change tack. We need to do something differently. And what we, the United States, what we need to do, if we want to be a true, positive big daddy for Israel, is to reverse course completely and hammer them until they do what I just said. Hammer them. Not hold their hand while they kill people.
When it comes to the long-term strategy of the U.S. in Israel, in Gaza, in that region, in the Middle East in general, do you think that at the end of the day, there would be some sort of agreement between Democratic and Republican Party that they need some sort of ceasefire, some sort of permanent stability in that region, especially when it comes to Israel, because they have a lot in common with the Middle Eastern countries, with these Arab states. They are so important in this game of superpowers. And it doesn't seem that they're taking this into consideration at this particular moment.
We are, in Washington, a curious group of people today. We are infested with neoconservatives. And neoconservatives have thought for ages and have been able to implement since George W. Bush came in and 9/11 occurred, that turmoil in the Levant, that is to say, everyone against everyone else daily, everyone killing people, shedding blood daily, protected Israel and secured the enclave that we have in that region. And incidentally, kept most of the foreign powers out, or at least kept them from doing anything nefarious to our interests. That is the most preposterous strategic overview and purpose I've probably encountered in my life. And yet that's what they think. The way to cure the Levant, as it were, is to leave it to the people who live in the Levant. From Lebanon to Riyadh to Yemen, we need to get out. To get out, except for economic, trade, and other elements, soft power elements of our portfolio. We don't need a single military person there. We don't need a single fighter jet there. We don't need a single military installation there in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. We have so much there now that we outstrip the rest of the world where we have forces, more there than any place else. That's a large part of the problem. I'm glad to see the Africans are fine. Niger, they're finally kicking us out. I hope every African country kicks us out. We are poison to them, and we're poison to the Levant. As Smedley Butler said so eloquently, he was a criminal for capitalism on two continents. Well, now we're criminals for capitalism in the Levant big time. And we're joined by MBS and MBZ and a host of other characters who are criminals for their version of capitalism too, sovereign wealth funds and so forth. Let's let the people of the region deal with their problems and give them the economic and trade and other help that they need and quit using the military instrument to, quote, bring peace to them. Because the neoconservatives are right. What we're bringing is war and more war and more war. No peace in sight. And Gaza is a quintessential example of the stupidity, even insanity, of such a policy.
Despite all the difficulties that the U.S. is experiencing, especially in the Red Sea, that they're fighting Houthis, that nobody knows what was the reason, why they're in the Red Sea, for what? There is nothing in the Biden administration controlling the Netanyahu, at least for what they're sending to Israel for years. They're helping Israel, the state of Israel, but it seems they have no control under policy, at least a little bit of their policy, to not risking a new fight in the Red Sea. And you see the same attitude in Ukraine.
You're right. A lot of this is all about money. It's all about predatory capitalism. It's all about money. It's particularly about the defense contractors who are making a fortune off these wars. And I'm not just talking about the U.S. defense contractor establishment. I'm talking about NATO's and others too. Russia, after all, has revived its entire military weapons-making complex on Ukraine. So that's another aspect of this that's dangerous. We're building these arms back up again. I've just been reading about the nuclear weapons complex in this country and what we're expecting to do with the $1.6 trillion and what we're being told we can do. This is a niche industry that's extremely wealthy. So what are they telling us? They're telling us, oh, can't do this aspect, can't do that, can't do the ballistic missile submarines. We can't do the Sentinel ICBM system. We can't do any of this without billions, even trillions more dollars. That's what you're building in the world now, is these people who are going to look at you from a monopolistic, predatory capitalist standpoint and say, oh, my friend, You've got real trouble now. You've got threats that you generated, that you made. Now we've got to build these hugely expensive weapon systems for you with cost overruns out the yin yang. Oh my God, 1.6 trillion, it's going to cost you 6 trillion. That's what this is all about. Smedley Butler was right. He was a criminal on two continents for predatory capitalism. Smedley Butler, in his testimony to Congress, actually named the banks and the people for whom he was a predatory capitalist killer to the Congress. Of course, no one wanted to hear that. No one wanted to read his material. But Smedley was right. Two-time Medal of Honor winner, United States Marine, probably one of the bravest men that ever wore the uniform, and that's saying something for Marines. And here he is telling the Congress of the United States that all he's been doing for his career is protecting capitalist interests, largely in China and Asia and in South America. Name the countries, name the companies. I mean, this guy was straight away a hero.
Do you think that at the end of the day, the Democratic Party would be able to bring back these people who are not happy with their policy in Gaza?
No, I don't think so. But I do think there are going to be sufficient numbers that Biden will squeak through. And then my question is, will his having squeaked through and will his having no responsibility towards another election, will that change all manner of things? I had a webinar on Cuba last night. My question was, why is Biden obviated, almost canceled, everything Obama accomplished with respect to Cuba? Cuba's reeling right now under our embargo, just reeling. People flowing out of Cuba by the thousands, brain drain, terrible brain drain, no energy sources, no real future for Cubans. A lot of that's because of us. So will Biden suddenly become the president he could be in a second term? That's the tremendous question. And then the question is, who comes after him? Because neither political party has groomed anyone. Neither political party cares about anything but itself. Precisely what Washington warned about, these factions, he called them, they will one day only care about themselves and not the nation. Washington was absolutely right. So what are we going to do beyond Biden? That's not that far down the road. What are we going to do? I read the debt today, again, from the CBO. Colossal. I mean, the prediction is there will be no money after we pay the interest payments on the debt and we do the defense budget. None whatsoever. Interest payments are going to be well over $1 trillion. It's incredible. Our financial situation, our fiscal status is terrible, as bad as it's ever been in our history. And that's saying something. Going back to the revolutionary days when Alexander Hamilton had to start the system that we have today, essentially to pay off the war debts. We're in sad shape. We're in very sad shape. But no one seems to be capable of exercising the leadership, the courage, moral and political, to do anything about it. After 4 years, we had better find someone. And Biden better pick up the mantle in his second term, or we're in serious trouble. Serious trouble. Empire-ending trouble.
Larry, what's so amazing to me, Biden was the vice president of Obama, and you see his policy is much like Donald Trump's policy when it comes to Cuba.
Here you go. This is domestic politics again. Here's what happened. They got this guy in as the senior director on the NSC for Latin America, and he got with the political types. And they said, ooh, might be a chance, might be just a chance of winning a Republican seat in Florida. And it's Rick Scott's seat. And there just it might be a chance of getting Florida back in the Democratic box, or at least getting it positioned for that. Ooh, we've got to still keep draconian policies on Cuba. We got to reverse everything that happened. Domestic politics. And so that's what happened. Meanwhile, 11 million people on Cuba, fast changing to 10 million, suffer accordingly. You know, I remember what Ricardo Alarcón told me. Well, our curse is to be so far from God and so close to the United States. How true.